I'm a great for recovering alcoholic. My name's Paul E. And if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home. You're off the hook. And that's what I was told a long time ago. You know, I mean, I see all these babes here in the front. No, I'm serious, and that gives me inspiration. And perspiration. No, I'm serious. And desperation. And then graduation. So if you're new or coming back, stay away from the babes. Unless you really want to work the steps quickly, and then you can get it. Anyway, this is like the greatest deal in the world, this Alcoholics Anonymous. So I don't even care about Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. It's 12 steps. And it was God-given, and it's given people like us an opportunity to reclaim our lives. We came from our own gutters, wherever they were. Whether you're a first-time starter, you know, you came in here, and you were so desperate, and you jumped in, and you see what's here, and you go for it. Or whether you've been here for many, many times, and you bounced in and out, and then you finally are here. No, you understand, like James was saying, I'm a mental patient. No, I mean, I have papers stating that I'm a mental patient. And any quick movements of any kind, any bright lights, any instruments, I like get flashed back to the state hospital to shock treatments. So please work with me. Anyway, tonight we may get a little information. Hopefully we'll get a few laughs. And we're going to cover everything up and until the 11th step, because next week is the 12th step, because it's the 14th of May. That's always the 12th step. No, I mean, it should be. Anyway, look, you know, the first step, and I know there's a lot of people, not as many tonight. How many people are living in a place that they don't, that they live with people they don't know? Okay, so in other words, you know, like a halfway house or a rehab or something. No, I just want to know, like, who's here. So if you're one of those people, the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous really sums up your life. And what I mean by that is anybody that at 6:30 tonight or 6 o'clock tonight, they were sitting, finishing their dinner or talking to their neighbor, and there was a voice from upstairs or downstairs and it said, "It's time to get on the van." If somebody said that to you or says that to you in the morning, noon, or night, there's only one reason. You're nuts. And it's not safe that you be out there unaccompanied by someone. So, you know, really, I know a lot of people, they come in here and say, "Oh, I'm not insane, I can't come." If you drank and you used to get into one of those places, you're nuts. And so we have the answer to how unnut you, okay? Sounded sexual in nature. So, easy. Get out of the gutter, please. Stop it. Stop it. So the first half of the first step's the only one you have to do perfectly. It's a truth that you're powerless when you get here. You're going to be powerless till the day you die. And, you know, this is repetition. And if you've been here straight through, you're going to keep hearing it. And, you know, in my opinion, I heard everything I needed to hear in the first 90 days that I was sober. And I've been spending, and God willing, will spend the rest of my life putting that so deep in my brain and in my actions and in my psyche that I don't think of picking up, that I can go to where there's booze or other stuff and not have to worry about it. Because like in the step tonight, it talks about that we're placed in a safe place, a position of neutrality. That we don't, you know, swear off, and we don't want to, I don't care anymore. I mean, I can go anywhere I want. I've been removed from that obsession's been removed from me. And so, you know, it was a lot of years of pain and misery and degradation. I got here, and I had enough, you know, and there were a few people that were doing something that I couldn't do. And, you know, my first meeting, it was the first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in Broward County. There was only one meeting. And I mean, now, and to me, and if this doesn't impress upon you, or impresses on me, the power of the power, or the enormity of the God that I've come to understand a little bit, that loves me to pieces, it's just this little story that I hope to God I never forget, and I know I never will. I read an article, it was February of 1980, and it was about this brand new program, it was in the Miami Herald, about this brand new program that had just started, borrowed from Alcoholics Anonymous, called Narcotics Anonymous, and there was one meeting. And it was in downtown Fort Lauderdale. And, you know, I was down here. I'd been down here for 6 or 7 months. I wasn't at a bottom. I was 11 years past my bottom. My bottom was 1969. This was 1980. And I made a phone call. And I went to this meeting. And I looked around. There were only 6 or 7 people there. And it was in a Lutheran ministry downtown Fort Lauderdale, St. Francis Mission. And I looked around and I didn't want to be there. And if anybody's feeling that way tonight, I can understand that. And I thank God that I didn't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Because what happened is the following. I got up to leave. I went to the guy who took me. I said, thanks, I'm going home. And at the exact minute that I was walking out of this Lutheran ministry in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in walked a guy from my block in Queens, New York City, that I had run the streets with in the 60s and 70s. And you know, I mean, at the exact minute I'm leaving, he's walking in. And so I don't know what we did, I don't know what was said, and he passed away last year clean from prostate cancer, you know, God rest his soul. But I ended up back in the meeting, and I sat down and I got a cup of coffee, and I looked up to the front of the room, and he was sitting in the front of the room. He was the speaker that night, prearranged to share his story. Coincidentally, he had been asked, and now I'm sitting and I'm listening to his story, and I didn't need to listen to it because I lived it with him. But I'm going to tell you when I paid attention. Mark sat in the front of the room. He said, I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink or a drug for 6 months. Now, I know, just like me, he couldn't go 6 months. You know, I couldn't go 6 weeks. I don't know about you. I couldn't go 6 days. As a matter of fact, the only time that I ever refused a drink or a drug is if I misunderstood the question. So, we didn't have key tags back then, you know, it was brand new, it was before it was like, became the place to be, you know, it was like these little white poker chips. And I picked up this white poker chip that I don't understand to this day how it worked or why it worked, but it was the only one I picked up. I don't know how, I was done. You know, I didn't believe in God, I didn't. But I look back on it, I don't know. I think I had too much excitement at dinner. I was with like 7 of my intimate friends, all male, and that gets me very excited. I'm not judging, I'm just saying. But so anyway, so I look back on that, and that was 2 Jewish alcoholic heroin addicts in a Lutheran ministry in downtown Fort Lauderdale, 1,200 miles from their home in Queens, New York City. And while one is walking out to go and continue killing himself, being me, the other one is being sent in by this power to come in and share a message of hope that ended up turning my life around and the hundreds or thousands of people that I've been blessed to impact since that time. Life's about seconds and inches. And if you don't believe that, trust me, it is. And that was my defining moment. There have been many since then, but that was the defining moment that I cannot just throw away the coincidence. That I'm leaving to go and continue to destroy my life, and he was asked to speak, and he shares his story, and I sit and listen, and we lived it together, we got arrested, we did the whole thing together. It's not possible. It's not humanly possible. And that's why we get to the second step. Because that's where we come to believe there's a power. So whether it happens at that moment or later or when, but I took them all together. I came to believe that night that this power greater than myself was sitting there in the front of the room. And little by slowly, you people have become my power until you got me to believe in a power. That's not a person, place, or thing. And you don't have to believe the way I do. That's the beauty of this. That's why we accept all, nothing to do with religion, all faiths, creeds, sexual identity, doesn't matter. Just believe in something other than you. When you go to the mirror, realize you're not the power. And all will be well, you know. And you don't need to understand it. I don't understand electricity. But I know when I go home tonight, I'm going to turn on my switch and my room's going to be light. And I've come to rely on that and I've become dependent on it. And if I try not to use that, my dependence or my independence is threatened because I'd be walking around in the dark. And that's the relationship that I've developed with a power greater than myself that I choose to call God. And then we get to the third step, we make a decision. We're not going to go through all the steps, okay? The bottom line is, this whole program, and if this upsets you, deal with it. But this whole program is about coming to believe. If you read all throughout this big book, it says the purpose of this book is to help the reader come to find a power greater than himself that can solve their problem. It says it throughout. From Dr. Tebow to the there is a solution everywhere in this book to Dr. Bob's story. I never understood. This is just something for a, you know, Bill Wilson had a good public relations guy. You know, like Russell. Russell has a good public relations person. I don't. Bill Wilson had the public relations guy and Dr. Bob didn't. Because why do they tell everybody to only read the first 164 pages of the big book when Dr. Bob's story is the next page? No, I'm not kidding you, but not only is it the next page, but this is the most amazing thing, because most people say, oh, well, they told me to read 164. Why would I possibly read 165? So, right after, it's his story right here, which is right after that, talks about, you know what the problem is this book is a strange book. Oh, here it is. So anyway, so Dr. Bob's Nightmare is the name of it. He's the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, it's the last page of his story, which is page 180. Now, nobody who ever has a sponsor ever told him to read up to page 180. They say, read the first 164 pages of the big book. End with vision of you, and we'll meet on the highway and across the path together, and some will see us, and so, you know, it was like very cute. But nobody ever talks about this. So why don't we just share this? And maybe they'll do this in the big book seminar this week. They may never have read it either. So here, page 181, the last paragraph of Dr. Bob's Nightmare, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is what it says. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. Dr. Bob, co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, is telling you, hey, this is the deal. If you're too prideful, you have too much fight left in you, then you can't, like, embrace what they said in the first 170 pages. He feels sorry for you. He's basically saying, go out and kill yourself. You know, I mean, it's so amazing now when you look at it because, you know, I go to a lot of treatment centers and stuff, and most people don't want to be there. You know, I mean, that's just the way it is. I shouldn't say that, but it's just the way it is. So we, when we're speaking to them, are trying to convince them that they have a problem and that they really should latch on to this because this is the answer to the problem. Well, you know, back in the day, another phrase I hate, but back in the day, this day, if you wanted to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, you didn't just come in. You went to a place in Manhattan or Akron, and you had to convince them that you were convinced. They didn't convince you. You had to convince them. And then they let you get upstairs. Maybe. Wow. Must have been something I ate. Was there any flocka in that food? No, I don't know the effects of flocka, but I'm feeling like I'm having a flocka attack. Well, I don't know what it is, but it must be because I've never had this feeling before. Oh my God. What is this? Flocka result? Thank you. Yeah, I'll take this and then they'll piss test me and I'll come up dirty. Anyway, look, the bottom line is, you know, and it says it all through this book, we're not a glum lot, we insist on enjoying ourselves. And it's really true. The war is over. If you got here, you are really off the hook. It doesn't mean that you're going to be without pain. It doesn't mean that you're going to skip up the 12 golden steps of life and never experience a negative emotion. It means you're going to be able to handle everything with some form of grace. And that's really what the Serenity Prayer is. Ray Allen, God rest his soul, used to say to me all the time, not anybody, but he said it to me about the first five words of the Serenity Prayer being the most powerful words on the planet. You're saying God, you're establishing contact with the power. Grant me the serenity. Grant me the peace and the calmness within, regardless of what's happening out there. God, grant me the serenity. Grant me the peace and the calmness within, whether I have no job, whether my wife threw me out, whether I'm bankrupt, whether my house is in foreclosure, whether I have a terminal disease, whatever it is, grant me the peace, grant me the calmness within. And all I can tell you is that I haven't been graceful through this whole journey, but the longer I'm sober, the simpler it is for me to stay graceful under fire, if you will. You know, some guy was calling me today, he said, what? I can't take this anymore. What's he picking on me? What? Yeah, because you're God's stepchild. God doesn't have stepchildren. He gives us each what we can handle, no more and no less, regardless of what we think, okay? Now, last week, we went through the fourth and fifth step, and we talked about sharing and the importance, the right way, the wrong way. And then we went through the sixth and seventh step. And the seventh step, which Ray also told me, is the shortest yet most powerful step in the program. Seven words. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. What are my shortcomings? They're everything I wrote down in my fourth step. They're everything that has blocked me from you and him. Because after all, in the seventh step, it says it in black and white in the 12 and 12. For what do we want? Each one of us wants to be at peace with our fellows and with our Creator. And that's really all I want. That's all I ever want. And I was looking all the places around it, in Harlem and the Lower East Side, and with women and with scores and with scams and everything else. And I found it right here because of you people and a power greater than myself. Of course, none of us would be here unless God loved us enough to get us here. So we were all being watched over. I know that today. Whether you believe it or acknowledge it, doesn't matter. But just think about how many people we all know that died from this disease. There was one young kid that really shook me up. You know, Mike and I were talking, this guy Paul, great kid, 28 years old, and he was doing great. He had 90 days. He went back to Boston for a weekend, and he overdosed, dead, 28 years old. His whole life in front of him, one of the funniest, nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. and nobody's going to get to meet him. Now, if you want to talk about a tragedy, if you want to talk about a waste, if you want to talk about a life that was misspent because of this freaking disease, and that's the stuff that pisses me off. Because you know what? He had the same exact chance that we do. And he chose to pick up that one more time. So please, try not to, you know. If you have a problem trying to remember what the defects are in your life, just remember the word pagels. Pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. They're called the seven deadly sins. And I know everybody, no matter where you're from, no matter what religion, you've heard them. You were told you're not supposed to do them. And, you know, they had this other thing way back called the Ten Commandments. I know everybody heard of that. You saw the movie with Charlton Heston. Lynn, was that your first sponsor, Charlton Heston? Because, you know, no, the problem is we have 12 steps because the Ten Commandments don't work for us. God bless you. And the reason the Ten Commandments don't work for people like us is because every one of them starts with thou shalt not. And if you tell me what I shalt not, I'm shouting up and down Federal Highway. That's the way I am. Oh, really? Oh, I can't do that. Oh, sure. And that's how my whole life went. You know, that's why when it says in the fifth step where it talks about at the beginning, it says, why should we even take this step? And it says right in the first paragraph, it says, because people that don't take this step invariably got drunk. Well, I was tired. My whole life was invariably. I'd be driving, my parents would be driving me on the Cross Island Parkway at 15 or 16 years old, and I was always on the already on the road to self-destruction, and there was this massive building called Creedmoor State Mental Hospital. And they would point, and they would say, if you don't straighten out, invariably you're gonna end up there. They were right. Invariably I did, and I was in a freaking rocking chair. So I'm tired of invariably paying consequences. I still do sometimes, but I'm tired of it, really, for the most part. So anyway, and by the way, get a sponsor. If you don't have a sponsor, you're fooling yourself. You cannot do this without one, my opinion. Not even an opinion, it's based on my experience. I don't give opinions. Based on what I've seen, with the people I've interacted with since the time I'm sober, you can't think your way through this with the same mind that thought your way in here. So you need somebody to bounce this off. Any idea? Just, hey, let me run this by you. And it's been pretty consistent that anytime I have an idea to this very day that I run by my sponsor, he's never said to me, oh, Paul, that's a great idea. He's always said, well, maybe we should think about it. Let's back off. Give me a call. We'll get together tomorrow. You know, I still don't have the greatest thought processes going on here. You know, everybody says that AA or NA, really, because I treat them both the same. I mean, I know people in AA don't like them, and they don't. I give a shit less. These are 12 steps. They're exactly the same to me. And they're about saving lives. And I'm not interested in what got you here. Because the solution is exactly the same. Exactly the same. And so what I've been taught is how to stay here. And that's my responsibility, to put my hand out to try to help anyone about how to stay here. So I'm going to tell you the story because nobody ever gets thrown out of an AA meeting. I mean, not publicly and abusively, but I do. Nothing to do with drugs. I'm just going to tell you this story. 1982 or 3 or 4, and I got sober down here, but I would fly back to Queens, New York, you know, to go to where I used to live, visit my mom. My dad had already passed, and I would go to meetings there, and of course I would pick up my main running partner, Michael Arkin, God rest his soul, who finally got sober before he died. You know, he got sober and then passed, you know, from liver failure. But I would take him to this meeting in Clearview, Queens, and I would introduce him to the old timers. Now, Michael was one of the most obnoxious little people. There's one person that knows him, Steve, that, oh, and both Steves know him, actually. And he would just like to get into your face just for the point of getting into your face. So, no, it's also the sounds. I spoke about the movements and the sounds. No, could I pick it up? You heard about Rain Man? That's my cousin. No, Rain Man is my cousin. I'm serious. 20 minutes to up, then. So I bring Michael to meet Bernie the first time. I said, Michael, this is Bernie Sachs. He's got 22 years sober. And Bernie puts his hand out, and Michael says, who gives a shit? I mean, that was the first meeting. I would pick him up every weekend, and I would fly up, and I'd bring him to the meeting. And he would abuse the group. He'd abuse the meeting. He'd stand up and do inappropriate things. One week after X period of time, I decided, I was only up there for 2 days, and I decided not to pick Michael up. Because it was, you know, I was going out of my way. If he already knew now where we were. And so I go into the meeting at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning, and I go into the meeting in the Clearview group, and Bernie, the old timer of the group, is sitting there. It's back when he was smoking. He's smoking his cigar. And he looks at me and he says, gives me a hug, and the next thing out of his mouth, where's Michael? Bernie, listen. I decided, Michael doesn't want this thing. So I am not going to waste my time going to pick him up when I'm only here for 2 days, and he knows we're here, and I decided that I'm not doing it. Well, Bernie, the most spiritual, God-embracing, loving person on planet Earth in Alcoholics Anonymous, stood up, and excuse my language, he stood up in the Whitestone group in Clearview, New York, with the cigar in his mouth, and he said the following. Who the fuck are you to say that he's not wanting this gift? Who are you to say that he's not ready? Who are you to say that? And he says, as a matter of fact, get out of here and don't come back until he's with you. So I got thrown out of the Clearview group in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to bring Michael back to the meeting because that's the way it is. Who the hell am I? And he says, who are you to judge when someone's ready to receive this gift from God? And, you know, when he said that to me, it became so clear. You know, we say, oh, that person slipped 1,000. Who the hell am I? I'm a few quarts short anyway, and I'm only one shot away from disaster. So I don't judge. I try not to. I mean, in that, I judge in a lot of areas, but not about that. I unilaterally embrace anybody. I don't give a shit if you had a lot of time and went out, if you're trying a tough time getting time, give me a call. My number's always open. Not to you, Tracy, to the many. No, I'm serious. Sometimes, especially after you lose 29 pounds, you know, you become a chick magnet again. And that's what's starting to happen. You see the babes wanting to be up front, you know, the whole night. It's a subliminal thing. They know my wife's in New York. All of a sudden, they're calling earlier in the morning, texting a little later at night. That's okay, Tracy, really, it is okay. I love you no matter what. You know, I talked before about repetition and how, because a lot of people tell me, oh, I'm tired, it's the same shit at every meeting. Everything's the same. Well, at the 101 Club when I got sober, we had this luncheon meeting, Thursday lunch. And Janine, who's still sober, she lives in New Mexico. And she would make the sandwiches for the luncheon meeting. And we would have a speaker, you know, and a discussion. There was this one woman, her name was Andy Arnold, God rest her soul. And please forgive me for saying this, but it was true. she had the most boring story on the planet. I mean, no, I mean, you know, some people just do. I mean, you know, it's like, well, I drank when my husband went to work and I put the laundry away, and then I drank when he went to sleep. I mean, really, it was like, it was a tragedy listening to it. So what happened is, now, and this is the point of the story, it's really important, because it changed, once again, changed the direction of my life, because I didn't leave the meeting. This is what I'm trying to get across. She spoke, it seemed to me, three times in a 30-day period. Okay, now AA was smaller then, but certainly no need to have her speak three times in 30 days. Like it wasn't Bill Wilson or Clancy, I mean, it's Andy Arnold. She never varied one word of her entire story. I mean, it was the exact same story. But let me tell you, this third time, what she said, what she said every time prior, which is what tonight's about. She said, what I was taught early on is to read page 86, page 87, and page 88 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous every day. Now, she had said that the last two times that she had spoken. Now, page 86, at the top of the page, I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'm just going to give you an idea what it says. It says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. That's the 10th step. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves? And it goes on with a bunch of questions to ask yourself to clear the garbage out from today. And now the next paragraph on page 86, before you get to 87 and 88, it's like so cool. How cool was that? But you see the way I just sort of like let it go. I mean, I didn't try to go with my cat-like reflexes to grab it. I said, okay, I'll deal with it, and maybe the flocka thing will start working and I'll be all right. And if not, I'll be on the floor grabbing for it. Anyway, the next paragraph, page 86, says the following. On awakening. So in other words, here, you went to bed, you read this, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Now, obviously, you have your sleep, however long you sleep, and your book is right there, and now it says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Now, listen to this. You heard what the questions it asked at night, and here it says, we consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. The same things we asked about did we do the night before, and now we're asking him to help us not do it today. It's like really not rocket science. It's an incredible journey of internal growth and an incredible journey where it becomes exciting to find out what's going on. I mean, I love writing. I still write. But I wrote, my sponsor told me a grateful alcoholic won't drink, and I started writing a gratitude list. That gratitude list, and many of my closer friends who've been to my house, know that I have 27 journals, my handwriting, chronicling my entire sobriety. The whole thing, I just wrote, why not? I'm giving a gift, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm on borrowed time, I was dead. I was pronounced dead more than once in the 60s and 70s. Now I'm here, so I write. So the key is, this is the instruction manual for people like us. And I told you the other week that there's 100 something 12-step programs, and the only one that I don't think I qualify for is Lip Balm Anonymous. No, but I'm going to New York where they have lip balm meetings. Someone, I swear to God, last Friday at the 101, someone brought me up two sticks of lip balm. And they said, here, in case you go to your New York meeting so you'll feel comfortable. In this book here, in the 11th step, it tells us we've now entered the world of the spirit. And what does that mean? Well, it means that, I mean, it doesn't mean like that we're floating on air, but it means that we're trying to be guided intuitively by a power greater than ourselves. We've entered the world of the spirit. So that when we're in the world of the spirit, it becomes less comfortable doing unspiritual things. Not to say that we don't want them, not to say I still don't want them. I just know that the prices are so freaking great. Well, no matter what it is, whether it's a quick money deal, some scam, some woman, whatever. It's just the price, man. Play it through. And it's the same price that you need to play through early on about drinking or drugging. Play it through. Play it through. And because, you know, pain is a great motivator. It's the only thing that's really ever got me to really dig deep in these steps. But you know what? I become sort of like, it says in a sense that we don't flee from pain. I don't flee from it, but I also don't attract it today. I have a pretty cool, easygoing life, okay? And, you know, there's a lot of talk about humility in this step, okay? And I don't know what humility is. And, you know the person that talks about humility obviously doesn't have it, you know? There was this thing, it says, a poem, it said, humility is a precious virtue. If you think you have it, you don't. And if you don't have it, you should. And if you're bragging about it, you ain't got it. And if you ain't got it, you better get it. And the reality is, because this is a story I thought about today before I came in tonight. I had about 4 or 5 years sober. And I was speaking a lot. You know, look, I took to this like a duck to water. I mean, it was really the answer I was looking for my entire life. It wasn't anything that I did to like become a good AA guy. It was just for me, it was like a wow, oh my God. The minute I got here, I rarely, one time did I ever think of drinking or drugging in the 35 years that I've been here, only once. And that's obviously a miracle of multiple sources. I can't do that, okay? But, so I'm speaking a lot, I'm speaking all over, I'm speaking at conventions, and so one Friday night, I'm speaking at the 101 Club, and I had 4 or 5 years. And I decide, you know what? I think my ego is getting a little too big. Now, I used to always drive convertibles, and people would say it's because my head wouldn't fit in a hard top. That's why I never became a professional comedian. I told you that. When jokes don't work, I don't like it. Anyway, so I go in the bathroom with the 101 Club, Friday night, a packed house meeting, and I say, God, please let me keep my ego out of this talk tonight. They introduce me, I get up to the podium, and this is what happened. I said, packed house with the lights and everything. I said, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name is Paul E. Not another word came out of my mouth. I was standing up at that podium with the lights bearing down on me sweating, and God had answered my prayer. I said, keep my ego out of my message. And I had nothing to say. That's how powerful the God of my understanding is. And I obviously never forgot that, because here I am standing up there like everybody's there. Oh, wow, Paul speaking, great. And I'm there and I'm sweating. And, you know, obviously after a couple minutes, I just got down. I sat down. But I mean, how humiliating and embarrassing, you know what? Because I had put myself out there thinking I was something that I wasn't. That's the reason, by the way, which I'm sure I shared here, and if I didn't, you have to buy the tape series, about No, John's got the order forms. About becoming such a big shot that at 8 years, and there's a lot of people in this room that know this because they were there and helped carry me through this. But at 8 years, I was the guy. I had the most beautiful wife in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a beautiful 2 or 3 year old son. I had a making a lot of money in a business. I had a beautiful Cadillac convertible. I'm speaking everywhere for every fellowship known to man. And in a very short order, my wife left. My business went bankrupt. My house was taken from me. My wife ended up with some other guy, which is what wives do. But much more importantly, I didn't want to drink and I didn't want to drug, but I also didn't want to live. And I was living on a guy I sponsored couch from being the big shot, and it wasn't far from the railroad tracks, and I was really thinking about laying down on the tracks. 8 years sober, active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, having had worked every step, having sponsored people, taken meetings to jails, prisons, detoxes, and I got to that crunch moment, and you know what? I was really at crunch time. And I made a phone call to one of the rehabs that used to send, this is before, you know, every corner had a rehab. This is 27 years ago. And I made a phone call to this rehab that used to send me their people, and I told them how much trouble I'm in. And this woman, Joho, God love her, may she rest in peace, she said, "Paul, come up here, we have a bed for you." I said, "No, Joe, you don't say, I have no money, I have no." She said, "No, come up here." Let me tell you something. I went into this treatment center in Delray Beach, Florida. I picked up my 8-year medallion in this treatment center in Delray Beach, Florida. A treatment center for people that couldn't get sober because I needed to find out what I missed. You know, my sponsor would always say, you know, take what you need and leave the rest. He says, "Well, now you better go back for the rest." Because somewhere I left too much somewhere, and I was in a shitload of trouble. And then the first 4 days I'm in this rehab, it's a small treatment center on the beach, and the first 4 days I'm there, I'm doing what I do, you know, the Paulie shuffle. These are people that can't stay sober. "Oh, you can't stay sober, here's what you gotta do. You need a sponsor, you get a book, and you just make a call, call them every day, you know, I'm going through this thing." So after about 4 days of this, the owner of this place, Jim Bryant, God rest his soul, he takes me outside to the benches there by the shuffleboard court. And he looks at me under the beard, he says, "Paul, why are you here?" "You know, Jim." I said, no, "why are you here?" I said, "Jim, you know, I lost everything." He says, "No, but why are you here? What do you want us to do?" So he asked me all these questions. I break down hysterically crying when he says, "Do us a favor, shut up. You have nothing to say. You're here to let us heal you instead of you trying to defer the thing by helping everyone else." Because that's something we can all do. You know, they talked about it in the books about two-steppers. You know, you admit you're powerless and then run out and save the world. And I did that for a while. But you better fill that middle part in, or there's going to be some big prices to pay. You know, so anyway, that was, you should have heard the rumors going around then. Okay, because the reality is nobody really checks into a rehab 8 years clean and sober into a regular 30-day rehab. Although, after I did that, a very good friend of mine who's in Broward County and now has sobriety in his 40 years checked into the same rehab for the same reason. And they called me up to go see him while he was there. So, you know, look, you hit the wall, you hit the wall. You just don't take yourself out. You know, there's a lot of suicides after people get sober. It's unnecessary. You know, the only other thing I want to say, and then I want to read something, is there was a service on Sunday for one of my mentors, Kenny Kane, at the 101 Club. I have not stopped thinking about, not that I haven't stopped thinking about Kenny, because I'll think about him forever. He's told me so many great things. But what happened there, the evidence of what happens if a person suits up and shows up for 42 years doing the same thing here, the place was out the door, standing room only. It was amazing. It was an insane, I can't believe how, this is like so cool. I'm gonna be on Dancing with the Stars after the summer. We're dancing on the bars. Anyway, it was one of the most amazing testimonies to the power of God that what this guy did, and May 5th would have been his 42nd sober anniversary. And he impacted my life, John's life, and many others' lives dramatically. For years and years and years, he did the same thing. So that's one of my goals. I'd love to like to go like that. This is something I happened to find. Someone sent it to me today, and I just figured it would be appropriate to read, simply because it was about Dr. Bob, and I'm going to become his new press agent. I told you that I like the guy. This is Dr. Bob's last message, presented at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous in July 1950 in Cleveland, Ohio. This is what he said. My good friends in AA and of AA. Now keep in mind, it's 1950. This is only 11 years after AA began. Well, 1939, after the book was published. 15 years after AA began. But keep this in mind, the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions book wasn't written until 1953. So this is 3 years before they have traditions, 3 years before they have any, they were flying by the seat of their pants. And that's why, to me, this was really incredible when I read it this morning, which is why I printed it up. I feel I would be very remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to welcome you here to Cleveland, not only to this meeting, but those that have already transpired. I hope very much that the presence of so many people and the words that you have heard will prove an inspiration to you, not only to you, but may you be able to impart that inspiration to the boys and girls back home who were not fortunate enough to be able to come. In other words, we hope that your visit here has been both enjoyable and profitable. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing that I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength hasn't returned as I would like. So my remarks of necessity will be very brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed into my mind on which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind but have very little to do with our actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is. So let's bear those two things in mind. Let us also remember to guard that erring member, the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us, to our less fortunate brothers. Thank you very much.